Now I can hear my voice fill the room.
Doesn't he sound delicious?
I do. So, good tech ed so far?
Yes.
Nice. You're almost at the halfway point? So it means you have to drink more now if you've not hit your quota, so a little more chance, but wait till after the session's over. Thanks everyone for coming. My name is Stephen Rose. I am a senior product marketing manager with the Windows team back in Redmond. For those of you who follow the Springboard series on TechNet, read the Springboard series Insider, Windows team blog, TechNet, and all the other good stuff, you have seen some of the fine stuff that we put out for folks every single month. And with me is Master PFE, Master Matthew Reynolds.
How's my microphone? All right, you hear me? I have a loud voice. Sometimes I don't need a microphone. I'll take it easy. I'm Matthew Reynolds. I work for Microsoft Premier Field Engineering. By trade, I'm an Active Directory guy. So I've been doing enterprise Active Directory for a lot of years, including I'm a teacher at the master's program. I've developed some of the code for the AD wrap, if any of you have experienced that. But lately, my goal in life is to win the client experience, the Windows client experience. That's what we're going to be talking about later today. I also contributed a chapter to the upcoming PowerShell Deep Dives book, so you should all go buy it over and over.
He'll sign that chapter for you if you like. So how many of you sat this session last year in Orlando? Raise your hands. Ooh, quite a few of you.
Yeah, better.
Awesome. Thank you very much for making this one of the top five sessions at TechEd last year. We're going to try to top that this year. So from the people who raised their hand, is anybody willing to share a success story that you got from sitting the session and then going back? And I will bribe, if I can get two, I have two VIP passes to the sold-out Springboard community party, and I will give one to each story. So if you have one, there are microphones. Step up and let's hear it. Anybody have a good success story? Something that they learned, they were able to walk away with, try out? Everybody's too shy. They're not, haven't...
It is a big, scary room.
These are the good. We have one over there?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Okay. Share with me.
So, yes, I came to your Spring Dwarf series, and I was we are a distributed community. I mean, I work for Central IT, but we have departments across campus. And this one librarian or a library group was having this problem where they were unable to log in. They were having super slow logins and everything. And some colleagues of mine were trying it out and blah, 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 blah. So we were on site and I'm looking at it and we, you know, we were trying the normal things. We couldn't figure anything else out. And I said, wait, I remember a session on this. And at first I downloaded the tools and I couldn't remember some stuff. So I go on and I looked at the important part of the video again and I ran the tool and it came through and we found out that they were installing some really weird software, like through group policy, that was just taking an awfully long, long time to actually do the install. And it was, for some reason, I can remember correctly, it was erroring out at a point, and that's why I never completed the install, so then it would reboot, and it was just logging on, taking a long, long time. And the reason I found out was because you could literally see and track, and throughout, you could see this big, very, very big chunk of time, and it was showing you the executable being run, and it was...
So your life was better from sitting just that one tech ed session?
Yes, it was, actually.
Awesome.
I actually even told my colleague, I'm like, hey, look, I learned something that we can use right now, and like it will work, and all sorts of...
That's a good story. I want a round of applause for that story.
Come on up and get your pass.
One last thing. What would have been better is actually if my boss was there at site, and I could then been like, hey, look and see, like you pay for tech ed, and look at what I learned, but it was.
Well, we promise other success stories somewhere. Any others? Anybody else want to share? We have one more. All right. Well, here's your pass. Go ahead. What's your name, sir?
Brian Bell.
Thank you very much. Brian. I'm sorry. It's dark. I couldn't quite see you there. I know, Brian. All right, Brian.
So, as some people have heard, my work environment is not the easiest. And the largest thing we took away was not a piece of software. Was not a slide, was not a PowerShell CDM, but was the fact that we were not focusing enough on the user and the user experience based around that. Because of the session last year, we went and we got about a 50% run in on Windows 8 already. Wasn't as easy as a migration as we thought it was going to be, but the user experience has ended up about 300% better as far as user satisfaction. So what we took away from it is not focusing as much on the IT base itself, but more focusing on the end user and the environment.
Awesome. That is great to hear. Come on up, Brian. So we are setting a high bar for what you folks can expect to walk away with today. I think our goal at the core, and something that Matthew and I have chatted about, is that you should be able to boost performance to your users. You should be able to boost performance because it matters to your career. And you can do it. And here's the best part. The tools that we're going to show you today normally cost thousands and thousands of dollars, but we're giving them all to you today for free. No, I'm just kidding. They're actually free tools. You don't have to pay for them. How great is it that Microsoft is going to give you a very powerful tool and it will cost you nothing? Is that a good thing? All right. We always like that. One more thing before we jump in. There are folks that are watching from home whose bosses were not nice enough to send them to TechEd. Everybody say, aw. All right, so for those of you who are watching at home, if you would like to send in a question, send it to, and you can send it directly to my email, stros@microsoft.com. I'll keep an eye up here for them, and we'll also answer some of your questions from home as well. So with that, I've set the stage, Matthew.
Take Terrific. Us through. What a wonderful introduction. Isn't he a genius? He's good at this. He knows how to work a room.
Boy, that was pretty lukewarm.
Let's try that again. Isn't he a genius? Okay. Yeah. He's done a lot of good for the technical community around Microsoft, and we certainly appreciate that. So I want to start out with this scary-looking slide. This is meant to sort of feel like a political attack ad with a sort of grainy photo and the weird colors. And this is meant to tell a sad story. So let's tell the sad story. From where I stand, slow boot and slow logon is a strategic threat to Microsoft and to all of our careers, those of us who are invested in Microsoft stack. Here's a story. A young CEO of an up-and-coming company was having a meeting. This was a cold Monday morning in New York, and she was going to meet with these brokers and bankers from Wall Street in a cold, dark room. And this was her chance. She needed their backing, and she was going to pitch their company and how innovative they were and how profitable they were going to be and how these guys should back this up-and-coming company. A few minutes before the meeting was going to start, she noticed that she had junk going on in her background, on her laptop. You know, there was this nag screen saying you're supposed to restart that she'd been ignoring for a while. And she wanted to make sure she had a clean slate, so she decided to reboot. Several minutes later, after the meeting had begun, she's walking up to the podium and her machine's still rebooting. She kind of, as she's walking up, she's, you know, got her hands clenched around the thing. She puts it down on the podium, prays a little, opens the lid where she needs her charts and figures and data to be, and she gets applying computer settings, applying computer settings, applying computer settings. The thing I take away from that story is, what would have provided more value to the business? Reapplying those same GPO settings for the 87th time on the same machine, or letting her use her laptop? And when I put it that way, it seems obvious, but this is actually something that we really struggle with. When I do customer engagements, we have this attitude of, well, of course we have to do all this stuff. Of course we have to have all these 20 different management vectors and startup scripts that take 20 minutes to run. Well, I'm not sure that's a valid assumption, or that's at least something that we ought to revisit in the spirit of the answer that, what was his name on the second story?
Ryan.
Ryan, yeah, that was a great story. has anybody seen the episode of The Simpsons where they let Homer design a car? What happened? They let him put anything he wanted in it, right? They said, do you want the engine to be loud or quiet? And he said, I want it to sound like the end of the world. You want giant cup holders and shag carpeting and a separate dome for the kids. They gave him everything that he wanted, and at the end it produced a vehicle that no one wanted to drive or buy. And I kind of feel like that's what we've done to ourselves in the IT world. We've said, okay, enterprises demand group policy. Enterprises demand startup scripts. Enterprises demand this configuration vector and that configuration vector and home drives and roaming profiles and this, that, and the other. And at the end, unless it's done very, very, very carefully and with a degree of craftsmanship, you can wind up with a car that no one wants to drive. And then the pendulum swings the other way, and now that executive, instead of using a nicely secured machine is using a consumer device that's not secured at all, and so we really haven't gained anything. I could tell a lot more stories, but I think I'll save those for our case studies, because what I want to do is go from that sad story to a ray of hope that you can fix this. This is not an unwinnable battle. It's just a matter of craftsmanship. It's not a matter of whether to use group policy or not. It's a matter of how do you use group policy. It's not a matter of whether to have scripts or not. It's a matter of how good are your scripts. And it's a matter of focusing on the user experience. So today we're going to talk about the tools and the resources and the people that you have access to help you win this battle. I mentioned careers earlier, and Stephen did as well. I was one of the top Active Directory guys in the world for a lot of years. I was working with the largest enterprises, working on the toughest cases, creating content for advanced stuff. And nobody ever really noticed beyond my immediate team. As soon as I got involved in boot performance, suddenly I'm getting meetings with my boss's 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 boss. And when I go out to an enterprise and I turn somebody on and suddenly they become the boot performance guy in that enterprise, suddenly they're getting meetings with their boss's 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 boss. This is something that people are incredibly passionate about. The way people experience startup and log on is a microcosm of how they feel about their entire IT experience. And so if there's one thing to improve and make people feel good about their managed experience, it's startup and log on. All right, so we're going to briefly demo how to capture a boot using the latest tools from Microsoft, and we'll explore kind of what the boot process looks like via those tools.
Before we do that, let's explain where the title of this session comes from, because I think that's pretty important, and that's something that I know that you and Peter chat about. So what is a reasonable time to wait for startup? How many cups of coffee does it take? Tie that together for us.
Well, what do you think? How many of you have startup times in your enterprise? Let's define startup as everything from power on to getting logged on to getting to the desktop to the desktop becoming idle and responsive. How many of you would say in your enterprises it's over a minute? Yeah, I would figure most. How about over 3 minutes? Are there very many? Yeah, that fits with my experience. How about over 5 minutes? Several? Yeah, that fits with my experience going around. I don't think there's a magic number that we can shoot for. Enterprises that are at 6 minutes today are thrilled to get down to four. Enterprises that are at 2 minutes today are thrilled to get down to one. And you can go lower than that. A clean Windows machine boots in about 10 or 15 seconds, depending on the hardware. And you can get pretty close to that, and even on a managed machine, if you do things carefully. I'll show examples of that later on. So here's how we trace the boot process. First, we install the Windows Performance Toolkit. This is available for free. You just go online, search for Windows ADK, and download it and install the Windows Performance Toolkit. So again, just search for Windows ADK. It's very, very easy to find. That's the Assess and Deploy kit. Once you've got the Windows Performance Toolkit, which is part of the ADK installed, then you can just do this. I've typed Recorder in my start menu or start screen, and that brings up Windows Performance Recorder. Now, those of you that have been exposed to this tool stack before might remember XBoot Manager. It was a command line tool that we used to use to do boot traces, and it was pretty hard to use. You had to pass it a long series of arguments, and it was pretty cryptic. There was a lot of copy and paste involved. Well, now it's much easier. All you do is you choose the scenario, like general just traces whatever's going on my machine right now, or you choose boot, and how many times you want it to go through. For this example, I would just choose one. And then if you want it to focus, if you want it to gather extra details about certain areas like CPU utilization or disk IO, you can check some of these boxes. That's just for extra detail. And then you click start, and that's it. When you click start, it'll ask you to name this capture session and leave a note, and then it'll reboot your machine. And on the other side of it, it will pop up, and it will have this file for you. That's a .etl, .etl stands for event trace log. Once you have that ETL file, you can open it up in Windows Performance Analyzer. So here's an example ETL, and I'm just going to start blank. So this is, I've just double-clicked on the ETL file that was generated. Obviously, I didn't actually reboot, so this is from an earlier reboot. And when it first comes up, it's blank, which is a little bit intimidating. Where do I go from here? The key is this Graph Explorer. This shows you all the graphs that are available in the tool. And the first thing that I find is helpful is to orient yourself. You kind of need to know, where am I? Am I at the beginning or the end, or what was going on? And a great tool for that is to use this boot phases graph. The boot phases graph divides the overall boot process into 5 stages. Pre-session init, that's very early loading of the OS, kind of core kernel. Session init is also pretty core, early OS loading stuff. We're loading drivers and so forth. Then we get to win logon init. And win logon init is a busy, busy phase. There's lots of stuff that goes on in there, including starting services, starting authentication for the machine and for the user, group policy, profile loads, all of that stuff. And we'll explore that in a little more depth in just a moment. Once you get through the win logon phase, that means you're basically authenticated, you've got a user session created, then it tries to load your desktop experience. And that's what it calls the explore init phase. That's the green bar. So that's how long it took to actually load your desktop. So at the end of the green bar, the explore init phase, you could say, okay, now my desktop has appeared, but my machine isn't necessarily idle yet. Maybe I got to the desktop, but it's still another 3 minutes before the thing calms down. And that's what the purple phase is, the post-boot. It waits until you've accumulated 10 seconds of idle, and then it says, okay, that's the end of the post-boot phase. So you really could subtract 10 seconds off of that purple bar to say when was the moment it became responsive. So this machine is pretty good. This is a relatively clean install of Windows. It is joined to a domain. It does have group policies and stuff applied to it. But it doesn't have a lot going on. And we can cross-reference, we can add in what was the CPU doing during that all of that time. And looks like the CPU wasn't particularly busy. We can also add in storage, disk I/O, and what we can see there is that during the kind of core period when we were loading services and loading the OS and getting the user logged on, the disk was really busy, which is fine. It's got work to do, right? But then quickly after we got logged on, that you can see the disk I/O just tanks, which is perfect. That means once I got logged on, I was basically at an idle responsive desktop. So this is a really good boot. It took about 15 to 20 seconds to get to from power on to an idle responsive desktop. So now that we've explored those graphs a little bit, we'll kind of go deeper and we'll do some case studies of where things go wrong. Continuing down the path of getting oriented in this data, I'll close the CPU and disk details for now, and I want to explore this win logon phase a little longer, because very often there's so much that goes on in that phase between services and group policy and profiles that very often delays would occur there. There's another graph that gives more detail about the win logon phase specifically, and it's called, curiously enough, the win logon graph. And if we zoom in on that, we can see that nothing in that phase took very long, but we can still see all the things that happened. For example, here we did that tiny little green bar on the right side of the screen is how long it took to apply group policy for the computer. So that took less than a second. And then here's where we loaded the profile. And there's corresponding for the user and the computer. So there's GP. Let's see, that was the profile, so that must be the user. So that's how long it took to load the user's profile, and so on. So there's all these sub-phases. And in this trace, again, they're all very fast. So there's nothing interesting here from a diagnostic standpoint. We're just getting oriented. These are the things that you will see in the data, and what you want to look for is the one that's out of place, right? You're looking for the elephant in the room. Again, just for orientation, before we dive into the case studies, I'll also show you the services graph. This shows us a representation of all the background services that were automatically started during the OS boot, and you can get a sense of which ones took the longest to start. Among these, what we really care about are auto start services, because demand start services, except in some very specific cases, can't delay the boot. So one of the cool things about this tool set is the way that it flexibly allows you to regroup and orient the data. So what I really care about are the auto start services. So I'm going to take this execution phase column and drag it over here so that it's my first main grouping. So that everything gets grouped by that. And then I'm going to take this start type and group by that as well. It's sort of like a pivot table in Excel. And so now I can see just among the auto starts. And when I highlight something in the lower pane, it also highlights the corresponding entries in the upper pane. So I can expand it in either place. And if I look among the start type autos, I can see which services started and how long they took to start and look for any bad guys there. The bad guys that you're going to run into could be various. You know, you could have a weird driver issue. You know, we run into all kinds of things, but there are three buckets, three patterns that we see over and over and over and over. So as you start to use these tools and start to analyze your own machines and your own environment, the three things to look for are slow starting services, excessive disk I/O, and what I'll call enterprise wait for the network, which would include things like group policy applying in synchronous mode, roaming profiles, home drives, drive mapping scripts, anything that's trying to run during logon but may get held up while the network gets settled or VPN gets settled or whatever else. Those are the three minefields. Again, slow starting services, disk I/O, and enterprise-y wait for the network features. So we'll explore those through some examples. My colleague, Peter Vigleven, who came up with the term, how many coffees, one day he decided to measure his boot process. And so he sat down to see how long it took him to drink a coffee, and it turned out to be 120 seconds, exactly. And then he went to ISO or some standards body. This is now an official, you know, you can measure anything in terms of coffee cups now. It's recognized by the scientific community. keep in mind, these are small coffees, these Dutch. So we're going to measure our case studies in terms of how many coffees it took to drink, you could drink while they happen. So here's our first case study. It comes from my colleague, Milad. This is the case of, I'm logged in, but I can't do anything. What's your preference? Do you like it if I click through the screenshots in the slides, or do you want to see it live in the tool?
Live? Okay. All right. Live it is.
All right. As much as I can, I will do that. Okay, so here's the trace. Same tool set. We used Windows Performance Recorder. We chose boot, start. It rebooted the machine, and on the other end there was this ETL file, and when we double-click on the ETL file, we get this screen, Windows Performance Analyzer, which is, again, part of the Windows Performance Toolkit, which you can get as part of the Windows ADK. wow, we ought to make a poster of this.
We should.
All right, so let's take a look. The first thing that we see is that the boot phases don't look too terrible. This is, if we look at, say, the Explorer init when we got to the desktop, that's only at about 23 seconds. So the folks in Redmond to run Windows would say, oh, that's terrible. But for in an enterprise context, that's pretty good. 23 seconds is pretty good. but yet, once we were logged on, we couldn't get anything done. The user experience was terrible. You know, everything was sluggish. You'd click on something and it would go click on something else and nothing would happen. Then you'd keep clicking on it. Have you ever done that one? You can't remember how many times you've clicked on it, so then you just have to wait for a while until everything settles down. So we need to figure out why that is. So let's add in some more graphs. Oh, so I've added in the services graph, and what we can see is that among the auto start services, nothing really stands out. They all started very quickly, and we could break them out one by one. Here they're grouped, but it's just that little green blob that only took a couple of seconds. So it looks like this is not a slow starting service. So we need to look for a culprit elsewhere. So let's forget about services, and let's go look at CPU. How do you feel about this? You feel sad?
Bad.
Good. You should feel sad. Yes, we should all feel very bad about this. We should be ashamed. This is a good part of why everything was so unresponsive after the boot. The machine was busy, right? That's pretty straightforward. So, but what was it busy doing? Well, we could look in Task Manager at the time, and that's fine. But what this gives us is a view over time to see what was changing and how that all plays out. So we can look at the details by expanding here. And we'll sort this by CPU utilization. Oh, it already is. And our top offender is what? Auditing.exe. So this was an enterprise auditing suite that they had purchased to audit the fact that they couldn't get any work done, apparently. They were auditing our idleness. So that's pretty bad. But the fun doesn't stop there. Let's go look at disk.io. Oh, dear. This one should make you sad as well. Does it make you sad? It makes me sad. Okay, so we can see that the disk is very busy, but it's busy doing what? Well, let's find out. Actually, I'll just bring up the table. And our top offender by quite some margin. So we can see here, for the sake of comparison, these OS components like SVC host and explore.exe, these are in milliseconds. So the million is one, basically. So, or is that micro? So Explore basically used 1 second, 1.9 seconds of disk I.O., to put this in context. SVC host used 1.5 seconds of disk I.O., to put this in context. How many seconds of disk I.O. did archive.exe use? Is it too small to read?
Whoa, you will read me.
171 seconds of disk I.O. From our archive tool. So it turns out this is part of the same management suite. So first we audited the fact that we couldn't get any work done, and now we're archiving the audits to make sure that we know for sure that we have a history that we couldn't get any work done. So we've discovered our root cause, but now what? How can we fix this? Uninstall, right? You know, it's a funny thing. You could say that about almost any Windows problem, right? Well, just uninstall everything, and it'll be fine, which is technically true, but not very useful. The great thing about these tools is it lets you figure out, of the 100 things that are active on this machine, what's the one or the two or the three that are really causing problems? And then we can uninstall those one or those two or those three. In this case, they had some major enterprise dependencies on this stuff, so they pushed back on the vendor. And they were able to get a fix from the vendor that dramatically cut this resource utilization. It delayed it for a while, and it cut it way down, and cut their boot times to, you know, very, very small, almost consumer-level boot times. In the slide deck, you'll find that I've provided, I or my colleagues have provided kind of click-by-click analysis of these. So even when we're demoing them live in the tool, you can still go back and look at the deck later when you're trying to reproduce this, which was a tip we learned from our friend Mark. So you can go through this later, so I'm going to click through it now. Nobody panic. This is the same stuff we already saw. This slide was meant to show that it was slow. This is where we used performance recorder. This is the analysis. Everything was slow. Again, we already saw all this. Nobody panic. Oh, this is just pointing out that they were kicked off by scheduled tasks. It's incidental. So let's get to the lessons learned. Again, the easiest thing to analyze is high resource utilization. It's easy to find high CPU utilization or high disk utilization using analysis like we just did there. All we had to do was glance at it. We didn't even really dig in. You feel good about that? You feel like you could do that? You could do that one on your own? Okay. The other thing about working with vendors, including Microsoft. You know, if there's a Microsoft product that's in your environment that it turns out it's impacting your startup and logon time, push back on us by whatever means you have. If you have an account manager or you open support cases, whatever vehicles you have, you know, push back on us and push back on other vendors. And it's especially powerful when you have the data. Because it's one thing to say, well, we think it's slow. It's another thing to say, here's the data, and I can't tell you the specific stories because they're involve very specific people and very specific products, but there I've seen it over and over and over, where once you had good, solid data, people were able to get fixes, performance fixes, to Microsoft products and third-party products, lots of them, once you have the good data. You ready for another case study? This is the case, any questions about that last one before we move on? This is the case of, I want to go home. This is actually, instead of a slow boot, it's a slow shutdown. Anybody had one of those? Very, very frustrating, right? At what point do you just take the battery out? I said turn off. My toaster turns off when I tell it to turn off. I don't know why my PC doesn't. When you can't
find
the
one, relax.
That was a good one. He said, "When you can't find the charm to shut down a Windows 8." Okay, here it is. By the way, good timing. I appreciate that. okay, so here's the scenario. We go to shutdown. This one comes from my colleague Peter Vigleven, who came up with the coffee's measurement. So he's an important figure in the scientific community. He also He also likes to joke that coffee is very important in Danish culture. That must be why they have so many coffee shops in Amsterdam.
Yeah, let that one sit for a minute.
Take
gotta
a while.
Kind of marinate for a moment. There we go.
Let it percolate. So he hits shutdown, and it doesn't shut down. And he sees some high CPU utilization in Task Manager. But you want to see it in the tool, not in the slides, so let's switch to that. Okay, so he did the same thing. He ran Windows Performance Recorder. He told it to start tracing. He tried to shut down. It took forever. And then on the other side, there was this nice ETL file that he could open in Windows Performance Analyzer, which is this ETL file right here. I'll actually start from scratch on this one. I'd opened some stuff previously to accelerate us, but maybe it's more fun if we do it from scratch. So one interesting thing about this is because it's shutdown, not boot, how do we get oriented? Like in boot, we have the boot phases to go by. Like where are we in the process? But with shutdown, you know, we're just killing off a bunch of stuff. So you can go to the processes graph and see processes dying. You can see processes dying and then some not dying. So that's sort of interesting, but it doesn't really tell us what we were waiting for. So the next thing I want to do is look at CPU utilization. We can see that, just like we saw in Task Manager, after the shutdown command was issued, we got stuck in this high CPU loop for a long time. And the process it was actually bouncing between a couple of different processes, but the main one was winlogon.exe. Well, now what? Right? If it was something like Notepad, we would know, okay, go kill Notepad. But if it's something that's part of the OS, like SVC host or winlogon, or a process that can load plugins and do all kinds of different things, well, how do you know what it was busy doing? How do you look inside of it and see what it was busy doing? And that's where we need stacks. So as any good Mark Rusinovich presentation will tell you, a stack is a list of functions by their names that a thread was calling when you looked at it. So it's sort of like a little history of that thread. What was it doing at the time you observed it? And we can use that here. Windows Performance Recorder and Windows Performance Analyzer do a brilliant job of exposing stacks for scenarios that we're actually going to use throughout the rest of the presentation. So I'm on this CPU utilization table, and the first thing it tells me is that when log on was high, right? It's the same thing as the chart was telling me. But that doesn't do me much good. I need to know what inside of when log on was busy. So I'm going to add this stack column. And now what I can do is drill in and see what the busy function was within when log on. And I've got this, oh, that's exciting. So what I should do now is I should see if I can use Windows Performance Recorder to record Windows Performance Analyzer. I guess that wasn't this instance. Or maybe it was this instance. So that demo was deliberately staged to show you how easy it is to open these files in WPA. Notice all I did was double click on it. So let's go back to CPU utilization. There's a couple of different variants of how CPU utilization is viewed in here, the different ways of measuring it. If anybody wants to know the details of that, just hit me up after the session.
Uh-huh. I'll repeat it. It's fine. Go ahead.
Is it possible to do this, the tasks that you do, remote from a central location, like System Center, to get user performance issues? And they can report it, and we can check from a remote instance to see if we can help them out.
Sort of like an AGPM type of tool is what you're thinking about. Right.
Yeah.
So the question is there a way to do this remotely via System Center or remote server so we can point this at PCs and sort of pull this?
Yeah. So there are a couple of different answers to that. The underlying technology behind all this is event tracing for Windows, which is just built into the OS. So there's a lot of different tools that know how to use and do different things with event tracing for Windows or ETW. This particular tool set, Windows Performance Analyzer and Windows Performance Recorder, are really oriented toward one-off analysis. Let's record the scenario right in front of us, and then let's analyze it in this GUI. There are other tool sets, even as part of the ADK. For example, there's the Windows Assessment console and the Windows, that whole suite of tools where you can take machines into a lab, and you can have a whole set of machines, and it runs automated. You know, it can do boot analysis and other things. But let's say if you're trying to validate an image, you could have it run through and reboot the machine several times, and then it'll generate a report. So that's kind of that next level of scale. That's kind of lab scale. So maybe, you know, a handful of machines. For enterprise scale, to be able to say what happened on that machine over there at that time, there's nothing boxed that I know of. Some customers, including some with my help and some on their own, have implemented wrappers around this where they would deploy a package through, say, SCCM that has this embedded in it so they can take a trace from a machine, then it automatically opens a help desk ticket, sends the trace back, and has the help desk analyst start interpreting it. But that's some automation that they had to build themselves. I'll also give you another example of doing this at scale. Later in the presentation, we'll talk about at Microsoft IT, we've set up a system where we're gathering tens of thousands of traces and then aggregating them so we can see what our trends are and what phases we're spending the most time in across different populations.
I have two email questions, so I'll ask these real quick. One was, is there a chance the slide deck is available for those not able to be here? It will be posted after the event, so you'll get a chance for here for all the goodness. And then the other one was, since doing the session last year, is there anything new that's been added to the tool that we should be aware of? And you don't necessarily have to cover that now.
Yeah, no, actually, I think it's a good time. So the things that are new since last year, these are new versions of the tools. The versions that we showed last year were a little tougher to use, previous generation. So beautiful stuff that's part of the Windows 8 ADK, but you can use it on Windows 7 as well. The other thing that's new as part of our presentation is just all new case studies. So these are all new examples from last year. And as well as new information from Microsoft IT. Like when we come back to the scalability question, I'll show you what Microsoft IT has been up to.
Okay, there you go. Again, if you guys are at home, have questions, send them in to stros@microsoft.com, and we'll answer them during the session as well as we'll open up to you folks in the audience at times as well.
All right, so back to our shutdown case. We know that WinLogon was consuming a lot of CPU, but we don't know what it was busy doing. Now, this grid is sorted by CPU utilization, so I don't have to keep looking for which row has the high one. I know the high one will always be on top, and so I can just drill into this stack. Oops, I didn't add the stack column. So I can just drill into the stack and see what it was up to. Oh, because we reloaded it. For doing weight stacks, you have to, this is another thing that's new in the tool, you have to choose load symbols. This is how it knows what the function names are inside of each of the processes. One really cool thing about the new generation of tools is that by default, it comes configured with some workable symbol paths that point to the Microsoft public symbol server. In the previous versions, you had to go find some KB article and then figure this out and put an asterisk in the middle and paste it in there. Now it just does it by default, which is really nice. Okay, so now that my symbols are loaded, I can just start clicking the right arrow, and it'll just keep diving into the highest. There we go. It's on the wrong thread. Okay, so we're inside of NTDLL, calling some Windows function. Then we get to this interesting function called query is disk check scheduled for next boot. Okay, well now we know what it was busy doing. It's checking to see if the disks are scheduled for a check disk on the next boot. But why should that take 30 seconds of high disk IO? That's weird. So, and if we continue on down the stack, we find just further functions that are related to this main thing. It's all about auto check, disk check. So if we take that function name, and for this one I'll switch back to the slides, and plug the words from it, disk check, win log on, auto check, into Bing or any other search engine, again, this is all stuff we've already seen, right? We agree? Don't panic that I'm skipping. So there's the function name that we found. Query is disk check scheduled for next boot. We go search for that online, and we find this KB article. The KB article doesn't describe the exact symptoms here, but it describes something very much related, which is how to cancel check disk that's scheduled for the next boot. And if we go into that KB article, we find that there's this registry location where disks are scheduled for the next boot. So he went to look at this location on his own machine to say, just see what was configured there to try to understand the puzzle. And there's this weird entry about hard disk volume 7. Which turned out was a VHD that he had mounted hours earlier, and somehow or another something had happened where it had been flagged as, you know, dirty and needing a check disk, and then he subsequently dismounted the VHD, but this registry entry never got cleaned up. So whenever he would try to shut down, WinLogon would go crazy for whatever period of time it was, trying to find this disk, which was no longer attached to the system. So it turns out the solution in this case was just to clean up that registry entry, and problem solved. How hard would it have been to troubleshoot that using any other set of tools? Hey, where would you even start, right? A memory dump would work, but that's not exactly user-friendly. And so even though we had to go through a number of steps and we had to do a little bit of guessing along the way, this still just opens up a whole new world of diagnostic possibilities that has been closed to most of us for a lot of years. Any questions about that one before we move on?
Any questions in general? There are microphones. If you want to step up, this is a good point for us to take a few, and then we'll go back to a few more. Yes, sir.
Just a quick question about the tool. Obviously, it's part of the ADK, but is there some sort of a executable that you could just take with you so you don't have to install it on every machine that you're trying to troubleshoot, or is this something that you actually have to install the ADK on any machine that you're trying to diagnose?
So the ADK itself is huge. You know, it's gigabytes of all these different things. The part of it that we care about is called the Windows Performance Toolkit. And when you install that on a machine via the ADK setup, you get a redistributable MSI, which is pretty small. And so you can just deploy that to the machines that you're interested in working on. Technically, it's possible to do some xcopy stuff if you get the right set of DLLs. But the easier, more maintainable, more patchable answer is just take that MSI and deploy it to whatever machine.
There's a series of checkboxes for a whole bunch of features, and you can pick which ones you want and don't before you move on. We have full documentation on the TechNet site, windows.com/WACITPro, that will walk you through that, show you how to set it up as well.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Next.
Oh, hey, can I get this one in?
Yeah.
You mentioned feedback to Microsoft about problems you see in the enterprise. Why such a long, long timeout when a computer is off network but has an internet connection as a domain computer trying to log in and waiting, say, 30 seconds to find a domain controller? Could Microsoft do something about that?
This is being recorded, right?
Yeah.
Good. probably the best answer I can give to that right now is that I shouldn't comment. If you want to talk more about the way it works today and some of the specific timeouts and some of the specific components that can wait on each other, feel free to email me or come talk to me after the session. There's lots of different interesting wait scenarios. And that's also a valuable thing to provide feedback on to Microsoft, and I'm going to write down that you said that.
Here's a question that came in via email. Does this tool work for the server OS?
Yes. All our examples that we're doing today are client-oriented, but the same tools and the same principles all apply on the server.
Okay. Another one from email. Are there any new troubleshooting tools or methods plans with ADK for Windows 8.1?
Not that I can comment on.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think any of them were in the... there wasn't anything about ADK in the announcements yesterday.
We'll go over to Brian.
Okay, so I just had a quick comment. I got back to my seat a minute ago and couldn't really figure out how or what I said and what I said a minute ago. I need to clarify something. I said that Windows 8 was the hardest migration that I ever did. It was the easiest. What we were afraid of was that it was the user base that was not going to adapt to Windows
Sure.
8. And it was with the use of Stephen's tools or the announcement of tools through Springboard through the sessions last year and just continuing to watch Springboard that we were able to remedy that, our problems that we had internally. Windows 8 was actually the easiest migration we ever did. And to our surprise, the 300% satisfaction rate came primarily because of things that Stephen has taught in TechEd, but because of that migration to Windows 8. So I just wanted to clarify.
That's great. Thank you. We appreciate it. Good to hear. All right. Yes, sir.
You said it can be used for Windows Server. Can you use it to analyze RDS and ICA sessions?
Yes, although it's a bit more manual because the boot phases graph, for example, those logon things, those were written by people who were thinking about clients. So they assume one logon, for example. So in a machine where you've got lots of logons, you can still analyze them, but you don't have all of the nice helpers. Like that, the boot phases graph wouldn't mean anything. You would just dive right into disk IO or right into whatever else.
Okay, thanks.
One more question, then we'll jump into our next case. Any tips for distinguishing slow boot issues related to disk I.O., specifically determining if a slow issue is a vendor BIOS related rather than the storage driver? Or do you want to forward that to you and you want to take it offline?
Yeah, let's take that, okay. Let's take that one offline. In general, the techniques that I'm going to be showing can give you a sense of are you disk bound? Then figuring out why you're disk bound, you know, is it because I'm doing excessive I.O. or is it because my disk is too slow? And if my disk is too slow, then why? Is it a filter driver? Is it the disk firmware? Is it my, you know, some other piece of the stack? That's a much longer conversation, and so let's take that one offline.
Okay.
Okay. Ready for our next case study? All right. This is one that we ran into in the field, and then we created we recreated it in the lab because we thought it was so interesting. User reboots, and the reboot experience itself isn't actually that bad. But immediately after the reboot, he opens Office, any Office app. Could be Excel, could be Word, could be anything else. And when he clicks on the File menu, Office totally hangs, like, you know, unresponsive window, the whole nine yards, for about 20 to 30 seconds. And after 30 seconds, then it comes back and it's fine. So we wanted to know, what is it doing in those 30 seconds? And for that, we're again going to use stacks, because stacks tell us what function was I calling when this happened. So before we looked at a high CPU stack, now we're going to look at a waiting stack.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Did it only happen after a reboot, or?
It would happen at various random times, but the time where it could be clearly reproduced every time was if it was the first time after boot that he had launched Office.
Okay.
Okay, so again, we need orientation, right? And this is slightly after boot, so we don't really care about the boot phases. We're like 30 seconds after that. We need some kind of orientation. So how could we get orientation on this? We launched a process, and then it hung for a while. Well, there's a processes graph, so we can see when the process started. That's a good way to get orientation. There's also this cool graph called focus. This tells you what window was in focus. Pretty amazing, huh? Tells you what window was in focus during that time and the thread associated with it. So we can see that, you know, he launched Word, and then Word came into focus, and then some unknown number of seconds after that, which are probably just a few seconds, so somewhere in the middle of our screen here, it hung, and it hung for 20 or 30 seconds, and then it came back. That's all we know so far. So we know that this is kind of the region of the trace that we're interested in. So now we want to know what thread was hung. And in this case, the graph tells us. The UI thread for Word was 6348. So now I want to see what was thread 6348 doing during all of that time. The easy answer would have been, oh, it's high disk utilization again, right? If the disk utilization graph was off the charts, I'd say, okay, problem solved. But it's not. We're looking at the CPU graph and the disk graph, and they're both basically empty. So we were not resource bound here. We were just waiting for something. But what were we waiting for? For that, we can go to the CPU graph, and I've broken this one out in advance to save time, but all I did was I added the CPU graph, and then I removed a bunch of columns so it'd be easier to see. So what we see here is a timeline of all the threads on the system and when they were scheduled on the processor. So that's like really, really low-level information. We don't want to see every single context switch, but we want to kind of find the one that we care about and see what the stack was. So to do that, we want to go to the time period in question and the thread in question, which was this 3468 or 6348. And what we can see is that every time you see a little blip of color on that timeline, it's the kind of greenish bar in the middle, that's when that thread hit the CPU. So we can see that when he first launched Word, the UI thread was pretty busy, bop, 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 because, you know, it's repainting and updating and stuff like that. And then at one point, it just went away. The thread completely went away and was not scheduled again on the processor for about 20 or 30 seconds. That looks relevant. So let's explore that. In fact, this gap here is precisely 25 seconds. So let's see what it was doing during that time. I'm going to select a little bit before and a little bit after the gap so we make sure we get the right one. Now we could go to the beginning of the gap and zoom in 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 and try to get the one little blip and see what the stack was, but that's a pain. So it's easier to just sort. This is incredible that they have this. We can sort by amount of time waited. So we can very easily just go find what was the biggest time that we waited. And what we'll find if we go to the WinWord process within the waits is ...6348, I believe that was it. Yep, 6348. So let's see what 6348 was doing, and it turns out that it was waiting, how many seconds? 25. So this looks relevant. Let's see what it was doing. It turns out this is a really deep stack, so we're calling into all kinds of stuff, and we'll explore this as we go. Let me zoom in a little more. Okay, so we're calling some office stuff, And then we call, we're in user 32. That's significant because user 32 is related to GUI. So this is just further confirmation that this was the stuck GUI thread. And then we call some more office stuff. We don't have symbols for that, so it just shows up as a question mark. Let's drill down until we find out what's at the bottom of the stack, what it was waiting for. And all I'm doing is clicking right arrow, right arrow, right arrow, right arrow, because it's already sorted on weights. So no matter what, I just keep drilling and drilling, and it's always going to the biggest one, or the biggest remaining one. Okay, so this is cool. Now we see that we're calling into these shell folders. Get display name, get well-known item. What would be a well-known shell item? My documents? Desktop? Right. So keep in mind, he's just clicked on the file menu in Office, right? So I think it's trying to go build the file picker. It's going and finding out where's your My Documents, where's your desktop, all of that stuff, home drive. So we're getting these well-known items, and it's taking 25 seconds. And as we continue on down the stack, we can find out more about this. Specifically, errant click. Let's get back to the 25-second delay. There we are. Okay, right arrow, right arrow, right arrow. And there's some really good stuff in here. First of all is the fact that we see mup.sys. Anybody want to know what mup stands for or what mup.sys does? That's related to UNC paths, parsing UNC paths. So like whack whack server name whack share means go talk to an SMB server on the network. Whack whack TS client means go talk to a redirected terminal server drive. It's this UNC provider. So that tells us that one of this user's well-known folders is a UNC path. Furthermore, we know what kind of UNC path it is because further on down the stack we see MRX SMB and RDBSS, which are the SMB client redirector in Windows. So now we know that we waited 25 seconds trying to do an SMB operation that's related to one of this user's well-known folders. Well, it turns out the user has a home drive that's mapped to some NAS device somewhere. And it took 25 seconds for this call to come back. Now, we thought this was fascinating because we went from having no idea what the problem was to having a very specific idea about what the problem was just by clicking right arrow, right arrow, right arrow, right arrow. But we wanted to be sure because we didn't want to go blame the NAS. Maybe it was still a local problem. Maybe we sat on the request for 25 seconds before we sent it out because of a filter driver or something. And then, and then it actually came back quickly. So we did a network trace at the same time. Again, you've seen all of this. Okay, here's the network trace. This network trace is being opened. Oh, by the way, how can you take a network trace on a machine without having to install anything like Netmon or Wireshark? NetSH. NetSH, trace, start, capture equals yes. We'll give you a network trace that you can open in Network Monitor or Network Monitor's soon-to-be replacement, Message Analyzer. This is beta 2 of Message Analyzer. It works like Wireshark or Netmon that opens, packets and analyzes them. But it has this cool feature where it understands the protocols well enough that it will find packets that are related to each other and group them together into an operation. So all I had to do here was sort by the duration column or the time elapsed column, and right away, bloop, what do you see at the top of the list? Something took 25 seconds. And that something was a directory query from the client to the NAS device. So now we know what our problem is. Our problem is that the user has a mapped, a redirected home drive, and it's redirected to a drive that has some performance issues. Two separate problems there. One, the first is a design question of the user's at risk of these kinds of experiences just by having stuff that's redirected to begin with. If you work in a call center with a bunch of PCs that are sitting on a LAN in the late 90s, having things like, persistent map drives seemed like a great idea, because everybody was always connected to the file server. But in the modern world of mobile devices and often poor connectivity, that model doesn't hold up as well anymore. And so you see people migrating to patterns that are more sync and store locally and sync, like SkyDrive Pro or things like that. This one I'll do in the slides for the sake of time. This is a slow profile load. User couldn't log on, or took a long time to log on. And we're going to use stacks to figure it out. So we drill through, and we see that inside of winlogon, it calls the profiles function within the OS. And there's about a 19-second delay there. And the thread that was doing that is thread 528. So let's go see what thread 528 was doing. Use the same technique we did just a moment ago. And we can see that thread 528 was doing something called on logon, and that was waiting on SVC host thread 436. So let's go see what thread 436 was doing. Thread 436 was doing something called profile on logon, and it was waiting on thread 548. So let's go see what thread 548 was doing. Thread 548 was waiting on a thing called profile service, user profile, reconcile roaming profile. Ping the roaming profile server, and the ping time is like 600 milliseconds. So now we know. This user has a roaming profile, which puts them at risk of these kinds of delays, because that's a synchronous operation that depends on the network at boot time. And it turned out that they had a network problem, which is at the heart of the user's delayed experience. Any questions about that one? How about a break from the deep dive? How about I don't say thread anymore for a while? This one was this particular example was so much fun that we decided to do a dramatic reenactment of it right here on stage. This is a tech ed first. We're going to do a live reenactment of the Windows boot sequence at a particular enterprise. Are you ready?
I have a script and everything.
This is live theater. Okay, ready for some interpretive dancing? Okay, so let's turn it on. You should probably beep.
Beep.
Okay, so BIOS, you know, blah, 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 256 megabytes of RAM, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now let's go to the boot screen. So you should do a startup sound.
Right.
Okay, so So let's draw a Windows logo. This is coming up on the screen now. Wow, that is the world's worst Windows logo. Yeah. That's a lot worse than when I practiced it. Okay, so we got to the Windows logo, and now we played the startup sound, and then it shows Control-Alt-Delete, and you put Control-Alt-Delete, and you put in your password, and then the most amazing thing happens.
Hi, I'm Bob Corporate Casual. You might remember me from such human resource video classics as, so you're remembering the company at a conference, but not to wear your pants. Today I'm sharing innovative news about freedom in America. Thanks to our friendly legislators, those pesky mandatory break times that you've been saddled with will now be outsourced to unpaid volunteers from the local senior center. Everybody wins. For the next 20 minutes, we'll explore how to log on to your TPS report cover sheets. After that, you'll be allowed to use your PC.
That's right. They had to watch 20 minutes of HR videos before they could use their PCs. This one is fairly easy to troubleshoot. There's a registry key where a user init decides what shell you're going to load. Normally that value is set to explorer.exe. In this case, it was set to playcorporatevideos.exe. Nobody could use their machines for 20 minutes. Real case, by the way. That really happened. But with better drawing. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about making progress at scale. A gentleman asked earlier about, you know, can I do this in the enterprise? And it's great to analyze one machine, but what about analyzing thousands of machines and understanding what's going on? So with Microsoft IT, we did an initial engagement. We had all the same problems that most enterprises have. We had slow starting services. Here's the AppV service taking 80 seconds to start. It turns out there's a hot fix for that. Here's a clean install of Windows on the top, that's disk utilization, about 15 seconds. The bottom graph was a real machine, same hardware, after with a corporate image and about 5 months of real-world usage. 5+ minutes of sustained disk I.O. on startup. Not a great user experience. So we had all the same problems that most enterprises had. And we did a lot to fix them. We worked in the lab, we got some product fixes, we made some configuration changes, and we thought that we had solved this. We cut a couple of minutes off the startup and log on time, we felt good about ourselves, but we knew that what happens in the lab is different than what happens in the wild. We knew that there were users out there who were still having bad experiences and that we didn't have a way to understand those. So we wrote some scripts using PowerShell to wrap the Windows Performance Recorder type logic and the underlying ETW functionality in Windows to automatically gather traces from machines in the wild and then pull that data back, put it into, parse it out, pull out all the details like how long did group policy take, how long did services take, how long did this take, put it in a SQL database, and now we can report on it. And we can see trends, are we getting better, are we getting worse, what specific user populations are affected by different root causes. So would you like to see that data? Here's our overall boot times graph, and you can measure boot in various different ways, for example, from boot to desktop or from boot to idle desktop, and we track all of those things separately. This one happens to be boot to desktop. And you can see that we made some massive improvements early on and then have been able to kind of hold things steady with the Windows 7 environment and then continually improve on the Windows 8 environment from that. And this is a graph. Normally with graphs, you want to see it going way up or way down, right? That means either, you know, sales, we're making lots of money, or, you know, I don't know, diseases, they're going way down. This is a case where even holding flat is quite an accomplishment because there are constantly new threats, right? There's constantly somebody that wants to release a new script or there's some new version of something. So even just holding that flat is a pretty good accomplishment and it's taken some work on their side. So that's great for sort of reporting to management and having an overall figure. But what we're really interested in are root causes. You know, what components are slow and why might they be slow? So let's explore this one for a bit. This is group policy. The top graph is showing how long does it take to get from boot to desktop when group policy applies in async mode, which is background, versus synchronous mode, which means it's going to block you until the network has stabilized and it can go find a domain controller, et cetera. And it turns out that in our environment, it adds about 35 seconds to your logon. And this is some statistically significant data. This isn't one or two machines. This is 70,000 boot traces that we've gathered now. Across all of those different user populations, different machine types, it adds about 35 seconds to your logon if group policy happens to be in synchronous mode, also known as wait for the network mode. We thought, well, that's bad. What can we do about that? And so the bottom graph tells us how often does that happen? How many logons over time are affected by that synchronous blocking mode? And it turns out it's right around 40%. Month after month after month, it was right around 40%. And it had to do with some GPOs that we had out there that invoke synchronous mode. So we fixed it, and then we waited a month and refreshed the data, and it was still 40%. We fixed it again, and we waited a month and refreshed the data, and it was still 40%. That's the beauty of having this data, right? We couldn't really know if we fixed it or not. It turned out there was an old GPO that everyone had forgotten about that still had some software installation settings on it. So to the point earlier about installing, you know, software through group policy, that tends to end badly. That invokes synchronous mode. And so because we had this old GPO that had some old, you know, meaningless piece of software associated with it, we were adding 35 seconds to thousands of users' logons, you know, thousands of times a year, which adds up to millions of dollars per year in productivity. So we finally, we nuked that GPO in two pilot domains. You see at the bottom right, there are two domains where we finally went from 40 down to zero. That was where we deployed the final fix in those two domains, and now we're deploying it out to the rest of them. Pretty cool, huh? Would you like to have something like that in your environment? This is how we keep track of background services. This is showing how much different services are impacting users over time. And we've used this data to remediate and, you know, uninstall certain services. For example, the green line you see ends in October because we got rid of that service. Other lines, you know, are going up and down as we perform remediation and try to optimize those. We have various pivots on hardware, like by model and make, and none of it matters until you get to this one, disk. And you can see there's a huge, huge, huge swing in time to desktop based on the type of disk that you have. Now, the takeaway here isn't the individual disks, because this is kind of random field data. You couldn't say that this is a fair benchmark between disk A and disk B. The message here is the type of disk. If you go look up those model numbers, guess what's at the top? Yeah, specifically 5,400 RPM mechanical drives. In the middle are your 7,200 RPM mechanical drives, and at the bottom are solid-state drives. We were able to take this data to the people in Microsoft procurement and make the business case that, hey, we're affecting company productivity, or at least opportunity for productivity, by millions of dollars a year if you add up the man hours and expected productivity per minute. Let's upgrade our hardware standards. And it worked. We made the business case, and now you can't get a machine at Microsoft, with a few exceptions, without an SSD, because we believe, based on this data, we believe that it enhances user productivity. So let me end with an example of my laptop. And I don't mean this as a brag to say, oh, how wonderful is Matt. What I mean to say, this is an example of hope, of something to hold out there to say, you can do this. So my machine, mine actually isn't a Surface Pro as shown there. Mine's a little older than that before the Surface Pros were available. It's similar specs. It's a commodity machine. It's actually a wonderful Asus machine. It's about $900, so it's not anything exotic. It is fully, fully managed. It has hundreds of GPOs that apply to it. It's managed by System Center and by Intune. It has antivirus, anti-malware. It's fully disk encrypted. And it has tons of scheduled tasks and scripts that are running from IT, and the boot time is around 30 seconds. That's from power on to idle desktop. So it can be done. And, you know, next year we'll try to get it down from 30 to 20. It's about craftsmanship. It's not about do I use group policy or not. It's not about do I secure my machines or not. It's about craftsmanship. It's about doing things in smart ways and finding the delays and eliminating them so that you can deliver a productive experience to your end users. On the left, imagine a mobile modern user. Their machine, after their initial logon, where everything gets dumped on them, all future configurations are asynchronous, apply in the background, like it would be if on your phone. You can log on offline at the coffee shop. Documents are cached and synced. You don't have a hard dependencies on VPN to access documents, that sort of thing. And usually online, but not always, and often with poor connectivity. It could be over, you know, some shared 3G or something like that. That's the modern user, right? On the right, you have extreme compliance scenarios, like, say, a banking kiosk, where it has to fail closed. If the configuration can't refresh or it can't reach, say, a domain controller or something, it should just turn off, right? Not be allowed to use at all. So I want you to take a minute and think about which of these modes your users are in. And as you think about that, I want to suggest, based on my experience working with lots of enterprises, that your users probably, if you're like most of the enterprises that I've visited, are not in either of these modes. They're in a terrible no man's land in between, where we have long network timeouts waiting for things to happen, but eventually we time out and let the user go ahead anyway. So it's not any more secure, it's just more annoying. We have synchronous dependencies on, you know, on CorpNet resets. We always reapply configurations, even if we've applied them a million times before, and we make the user wait. And so what I would encourage you to do is think about how to get your users out of this no man's land in the middle. Identify those cases that really need to be ultra secured and ultra compliant, and take those extra steps beyond what most of us configure today to make it really fail closed. So, like, you know, this thing turns off if it can't, you know, refresh its configuration. That's, you know, maybe 0.0001% of your devices. For everybody else, think about what set of steps you might need to take to get them to a modern mobile worker productive user experience, where configuration refreshes are asynchronous, they can log on offline, they can be productive online or off, with poor connectivity or good connectivity, and focus on... focus on the user. A couple of resources to point you to very quickly. And again, the slides will be available. So if you want to try to take a picture of this, that's fine. Or just wait until the slides are available. Some other presentations about how to use these tools, including last year's from TechEd, that you can go look up. Also, more examples and case studies online that some of my peers have done, some nice blogs and things, and where to download the tools. Also, there's a Windows 7 post-SP1 enterprise hotfix that's very significant in terms of startup and logon performance. Again, that's post-SP1 hotfix rollup for Windows 7. So that would be relevant to many, many of us. We also have assisted support available from Premier and Microsoft Consulting. That stuff that we did with Microsoft IT, for example, we're wrapping up as a service called Boot X-Ray that we'll be sharing with customers through Premier. There's also reactive troubleshooting and MCS support that you can get as well. Related content, there are some good sessions coming up, including another one about how to use these tools. That's B315. You feel good?
Good stuff to go back and go play with?
Awesome.
Don't forget to do the surveys. If this helps you out, if this helped you last year, it could help you this year. We really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, and have a great
if you want more technical sessions at TechEd, do the survey.
Bring them. Thanks, everyone.